Hello, Duke fans, and welcome to episode 510 of the Duke Basketball Roundup Podcast. It is Monday, April 10th, 2023. I am your host for this episode. I am Sam Klein. I'm joined, as always, by Jason Evans and Donald Wine. Gentlemen, hope you had a great Easter, a great Passover. For those who are observing, are in the middle of a great Ramadan, and to everyone who is in the United States or is a U.S. citizen, happy tax week. Uncle Sam,
why have to say tax week like that? Why you look at me when you say that?
Uncle Sam be knocking down your doors. Donald, what's up, man?
Yeah, so, I mean, I guess I got to pay my taxes this week. Thanks for reminding me. I'll call my accountant and make sure that
I have to
done.
Do the same but thing.
Yeah, let's be clear. I sent my stuff to them weeks ago. It's just that, you know, it's a busy time for them. So they usually get it to me around this time a week. So I'm not stressing it. So I'm going to Cancun this week for a wedding involving one of my best friends from Duke. It should be a nice affair. So I'm really looking forward to that. So any future podcasts may involve some backdrop, at least for you three or you two, but not for the listeners out there. But I think we have some Duke basketball to review first.
To review or to round up? Are we rounding
round
up or are we rounding down?
It. We can rustify whatever our words we want to use. Not all of them, but some of them.
Jason Evans is also here.
Yeah, Donald talking about going to Cancun. I got that beat. I got that beat, people. This week, later this week, my wife and I will be going to Jordan and then Israel for about 2 weeks. Very, very excited about this trip. I haven't been to Israel since I was bar mitzvahed back many, many, many decades ago. My wife has never been, so it's going to be very cool. But if there's a podcast or two that I miss, it'll be because I was in the Holy Land. Sorry.
If you have to do a podcast from the
Western
Sea,
Wall, I'm doing a podcast from the Western Wall.
Yeah. One of the seas. If you have to do it from one of the seas, then you will do it because that's what we do here.
Jason, I don't know if walking around the old city with a microphone is like your best move right now, just generally speaking, not to get political. That's not my goal here. I'm reading the news, man. So, you know, just watch yourself.
Watch your six. Yeah.
I think carrying large hunks of metal around Israel right
now.
Just
don't do that. You know,
yeah, don't do that. Do that from your hotel room.
There's
yeah.
plenty of other people doing that, you know, so you don't need to do that anyway. We don't need to get into this. We do need to get into Duke basketball. We got two things. We got two topics today we need to cover. One of them, of course, is Jeremy Roach. The other is the Nike Hoop Summit, which just wrapped up yesterday. So let's get into those. We'll do the Hoop Summit after the break. It obviously touches on recruiting, so we have to talk about recruiting. But the headline story today is that we have another announcement. Jeremy Roach has announced that he is declaring for the NBA draft. He is going to test the NBA waters, as they say, but he noted in his goodbye that he is keeping his college eligibility open and did not speculate that he did not say he's entering the transfer portal. So that's not an option, at least at this moment for him, although he certainly is free to do so. But he said specifically that he is declaring for the NBA draft, but maintaining his college eligibility, which means he does have to pull out before draft night if he decides to stay in for some period of time. If he
it's May 31st. Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say they're confusing deadlines here. There's a deadline by the NBA. There's a deadline by the NCAA. The one that really matters is the NCAA deadline, which is May 31st. If you pull out by that date, you can return to college. There's a later date before the draft that you can pull out by and maintain draft eligibility for future years, but I'm not sure what you would do that.
No one that's coming from the U.S. right. college system is cares about that date.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
He is maintaining the eligibility. And gentlemen, correct me if I'm wrong, this is the first time, not that a Duke player has declared where we weren't sure if they were, or like where they were maintaining eligibility. But I believe this is the first time, though, even considering Trevor Keels, that they declared and said in the declaration, I am declaring and maintaining college eligibility.
So I have to credit a couple of my friends who we were talking about this. I was trying to find, like, because we had this conversation last year with Trevor Keels, the fact that most Duke guys, when they declare for the draft and say they're maintaining eligibility or they're going to test the waters, they never come back. But there's one that has come back in the last, I guess, what, you know, 12, 13 years or so. I guess this one and done era.
Javon Delorier.
Yeah. That was the only one that has announced that he was testing the waters, actually did the process, and then returned to college. So, but the thing about this one, I think that's a little different.
Hey, hang on. Wait, Donald, didn't Marcus Bolden do it?
He stayed in the draft. So they both declared at the same time.
Okay, that's
right. They
both
tested the waters. He stayed in the draft. Javon Delorier came back. So,
but I don't think when Javon Delorier went, yes, he maintained his eligibility, but I don't know if that was part of the announcement. It's sort of like Jeremy Roach is like not answering the question that the ultimate question that we want the answer to, which is he coming back to Duke next year? The answer is still, we don't know.
So Javon's announcement did mention that he was testing and that he was going to maintain his eligibility, or at least the announcement that he was entering the draft process, as opposed to entering the NBA draft, which is kind of a parsing of words. But it was made clear that he was testing the waters and thinking about also coming back. But I think the thing about Jeremy Roach is a lot of people do expect him to come back, or at least expect for him to not pull out or to not enter the NBA draft fully, because of the fact that most draft prognosticators are saying that he's not going to get drafted. So I think this is an idea where, hey, he's a junior. He has one chance to kind of do this test the waters process. And that's kind of what Javon and Marquise's kind of thought process was back then when they were both, you know, rising seniors and saying, hey, we can do this once. Why don't it cost us nothing to do it? And I think the issue is for Duke. Okay, Duke already has, you know, Tyrese Proctor coming back. They have Caleb Foster and Jarrett McCain coming in. Jalen Blakes is still on the roster. Jaden Shute's still on the roster. There's a lot of guards on this roster. And while it'd be great to have Roach back, what does that do for those guys down the line who were all expecting, at least in their minds, to have at least some, you know, sort of playing time next year? Jeremy Roach would alter how that works. So it's going to be interesting to see what he does and how Duke responds to that.
So a couple comments on it. The first one is, I think most people acknowledge that it's pretty unlikely that Jeremy Roach is going to get drafted. First round really isn't happening, but most people think he's not even a second round draft pick. So the question then becomes, okay, well, wait, why is he declaring? What's he doing? And it is worth noting that the new NBA collective bargaining agreement, which just came into effect, just was agreed to in the past couple
ago.
Weeks. Yeah. The new CBA includes a clause for a third two-way contract for every NBA team. In the past, NBA teams have been allowed to have two players under a two-way contract. And just so everyone understands, a two-way contract allows you to spend part of the time in the G League, part of the time in the NBA, and you earn $500,000 a year. It is not the millions of dollars that everyone dreams of, but 500 grand's pretty good money. It's probably, depending on what kind of NIL deals you're getting, probably more than most guys are getting from an NIL kind of contract. It's probably more than you get playing in Europe. And I think the fact that there is a third, essentially 30 more of these two-way contracts that will be available, that could be something that really works for Jeremy Roach. And if he decides to stay in with the NBA process, my bet is he's angling toward one of those two-way contracts.
So the other thing about the two-way contracts that has been kind of, lessened and also now removed in the past couple of years is that requirement. It used to be where if you signed a two-way deal when they first came about, you could only be with the NBA club for 40 days. So it wasn't a lot of time.
Now it's half the season.
You're mainly in the G League. Now it is 50 games that you can play to be a two-way contract. That was the rule. That has been eliminated. So you can have a two-way deal and remain with the NBA club the entire season. The only catch is once it becomes 50 games, it then becomes a veterans deal, a veterans minimum deal, which is about $800,000 or $900,000. So yeah, Jason, the two-way deal, yeah, he's going to be getting 500 grand. But if he sticks with a team and he plays more than 50 games, which, you know, if you're going to be on a two-way contract, that's starting to become a little more likely. Guys are playing more and more. This is why this has been eliminated. It converts to $800,000. So maybe that's what his mindset is, hey, I may not get drafted, but I can play my way onto a team this way. So that leaves four options for Jeremy Roach. He can remain in the draft and get drafted. Not expected, but not impossible. He can remain in the draft, not get drafted, and then through summer league earn a two-way contract with the team again, and he would be a part of the NBA and the G League. There's option three. He turns pro. He doesn't get drafted, and he heads overseas to play ball somewhere in Europe, maybe Australia. And number four is if he pulls out before May 31st, he returns to Duke for his senior year.
The other thing to keep in mind here on the timelines, and maybe we'll talk about this because I know, Jason, we want to get into sort of how this may affect the rest of the roster. And we've done a little bit of this already, but it's good to refresh now that we know a little bit more. Like, we know that Tyrese Proctor is coming back, et cetera. The other thing to keep in mind here, there's no like deadline for Jeremy Roach to enter the transfer portal or to, you know, pull out of the transfer portal. That's kind of available all summer to him. But
Hold on. Technically, you have to enter the transfer portal by May 11th. Oh, technically, that's yeah. There is a closing date. Yeah.
That is
for which you can enter eligible after that for the point. Fall.
To be eligible for the fall, you have to enter by May 11th. After that, you would have to get a waiver.
So, okay, he might get a waiver, whatever. I don't think that barrier is not like the NBA draft barrier, which is not something you can really fudge. And I'm sure that they'd figure out how to make exceptions.
It's worth noting that a year ago, Joey Baker entered after the portal deadline. It was right after it. He entered on May 18th, and it was just after the portal deadline, and he got the waiver, or everyone looked the other way.
I don't think that this is a deadline that matters significantly.
Right, correct.
So Jeremy Roach can enter the transfer portal. The challenge is that the longer he waits, the less likely it is that he ends up in a great situation for, like, if he's trying to maximize playing time or the ability to win a championship, one of which, you know, at Duke, as good odds as any as being like in contention for a championship, playing time is a challenge next year, potentially at Duke for him. But the fewer opportunities there are for him to go to a really top program that also has the playing time for him to get in, to come in and play guaranteed 30 plus minutes a game. So all these guys, and this is not unique to Jeremy Roach. There are plenty of guys probably in his position who are like, you know, I might be eligible for the draft. My position on the roster next year is fine, but it's not ideal. Like, where's the best place to go? And meanwhile, coaches are trying to fill out their rosters. It's not just John Shire that's dealing with this. Every coach in America is trying to figure out, okay, which guys are actually going to be on campus next year? And as soon as I know that they are locked in and that there's no way they're going anywhere else, I can start coming up with their prep for the summer. I can start getting the guys together for practices. Not that the coaches can really run practices right now, but they can get started on all of that as soon as possible. And one of the challenges that we've talked about with the transfer portal is that, like, it accelerates high school recruiting. Cause now, do you want to take a guy who was like the number 100 recruit, has played a year in college, or do you want to take the guy who's number 50 recruit, who's the high schooler who's coming out this year? In some cases, you might want the number 100 guy because he's got the year of experience. Refer to the DBR boards for all the analysis of what the preferences are here and the minutes expectations. But all of this is kind of swimming around in the background. So it's not just that Jeremy Roach has to figure out whether he thinks that his NBA prospects are worth sticking around. It's also, where is he playing next year if he is coming back to school? And if he does, the NIL opportunity at Duke is probably better than anywhere else that he's going. So if he's thinking about money, it's a different thing than if he's thinking about playing time. And frankly, you know, he's not doing media availability with us, so we don't know these answers, but all of these things are happening. So if you are listening to this story or you're reading about it and you're like, oh, obviously Jeremy Roach should do X, there are a lot of considerations here for what he may or may not do, and the timing of those actually is pretty meaningful. Guys, can we talk about sort of the state of the rest of the roster? And then I want to come back and kind of, you know, if this is Jeremy Roach actually leaving Duke and not coming back, let's spend a couple minutes just sort of talking about his legacy and stuff. But I want to talk about the roster a bit more. So, Jason, as of today, we still don't know if Jalen Blakes and Jaden Shute are coming back. I think that they're both like at the level, given that Duke is basically putting out a press release for everyone now, whether they're staying or going or whatever they're doing, they both sort of merit the announcement. Like, if Jalen Blakes is coming back to for his junior year, Duke will put out a thing that says Jalen Blake's returning to Duke or something. So what's the status right now of how you're looking at the guard rotation, knowing that Jeremy Roach has declared, but that maybe he might be coming back?
I think that Roach's declaration really complicates things for Jalen Blake's and Jaden Shute, especially for Jalen Blake's, who there's a lot of positional overlap there with Jeremy Roach. And a lot of it is because of the timing of these things. I mean, we already mentioned the early entry deadline for the NCAA to pull out of the draft is May 31st. The NBA combine is May 15th to 21st. And all of these are dates that are after the portal closes on May 11th. We already said there's some fungibility in that. You can sometimes apply for a waiver and things like that. But the reality is, if you're trying to get a spot, if you're trying to find the right kind of situation for you, you want to get in the portal sooner, not later. And if you're Jalen Blake's, and you're not going to know until the middle of May or maybe the end of May whether or not Jeremy Roach is going to be back, I think it makes your decision much more difficult. Because looking at this roster, if Roach leaves, I think that there are minutes to be had for someone like a Jaden Shute or a Jalen Blake's. I don't know about for both of them, but I think for one of them, I think it's very reasonable to think that Duke will have a four-guard rotation. And we know that Proctor's going to be there. We're pretty sure that McCain and Foster are going to be part of that rotation. So who's the fourth guy that falls into that rotation? If it's Jeremy Roach, he's sucking up 30 minutes, and suddenly it's really hard for a Jalen Blake's or a Jaden Shute to get time. But if Roach is not there, I think there's an opportunity for one of those guys, at least maybe even both of them, to get some opportunity. But this complicates things because, Sam, I'll push back on you. I think that it's very intentional that the announcement that Jeremy Roach made today made no mention of the portal, made no mention of anything else, but made it pretty clear. To me, it felt pretty clear if he comes back, he's coming back to Duke. I have no inside info on that. You know, he could change his mind, but I feel like he sort of said, I'm going to check out the NBA, but if not, I'm coming back to win a title at Duke.
And let me be clear, I agree with you that is the likely outcome if he decides not to stay in the pro process, that he's coming back to Duke, but he will be doing so almost certainly in a diminished role. Like, he is not going to get the same minutes next year, I think, that he did this year.
Man, I don't know.
I think that the talent that Duke has coming in the guard positions, and I think the talent Duke has elsewhere on the roster, is such that unless John Shire is playing small next year, I don't see Jeremy Roach playing 35 minutes a game. He may still start and get.
Oh, I think he's absolutely. Hold on. He would be a very experienced player, a senior. Yeah. I think there's no question he's starting. You may be right. Maybe rather than 35, he's playing 28, but I don't know.
It's not a perfect comparison, but Greg Paulus went from starting and playing 30 minutes a game to not starting and not playing 30 minutes a game. Now,
Paulus is a really bad comparison.
Yeah. Jeremy Roach doesn't have Greg Paulus's injury issues, blah, blah, blah. But all of this, like, he has to know that there are risks associated with that as well. And I don't know. Look, he could also come back and be a first team All-American, right? Like, basically every outcome, I feel like, for Roach is on the table next year, because we're not sure sort of game to game or half to half, as we talked about all this past year, what version of Jeremy Roach we're getting.
So I also think, and to push back a little bit on Jalen Blake's and Jaden Shute, like, you mentioned that they're probably at the level that Duke is going to make an announcement one way or the other about their future, whether they're coming back, whether they're entering the transfer portal. I don't see that unless they enter the transfer portal. I mean, even Joey Baker, we assumed was coming back. He didn't make an announcement saying, hey, I'm coming back for my senior year and then change his mind. It was assumed that he was coming back. And then after, you know, the portal, you know, quote, closed, the window closed, he then entered his name into it. So it was, I think those two guys, like, we're going to find out about them. Christian Reeves. Yeah. Those guys on the bench, like, if they transfer, we will know about it. But other than that, you assume that they're on this team until they tell us otherwise.
It's different than the Ryan Young announcement, because Ryan Young was a guy who sort of had to actively seek that extra year. It's right. Different than those guys who sort of have the eligibility. It's not got nothing to do with the COVID year, that kind of thing.
Well, Ryan Young had the extra eligibility. What he didn't have was a clear academic program, which the other guys do because they're all still undergrads. So it's different when I've completed my sophomore year of college. What will I do next year? I guess my junior year of college. There's no decision point there. The other sort of interesting factor in this, and I have no idea if this is playing a role, and now we're just throwing all kinds of ideas out, is that the end of year men's basketball banquet is this week. And I do wonder if the timing of that plays into this at all in terms of like, are guys going to announce that they're transferring like the day of the banquet or like the day after the banquet?
That's a great point.
So we may be entering like it's Monday afternoon now. The banquet I think is on Thursday. We may be entering like a blackout period pretty soon of like, let's not do any transfers or NBA draft announcements right now, because like we should really be focusing on the banquet.
Well, I feel like transfer is different from NBA draft announcements. Like NBA draft guys, you're like, okay, they're moving on to something bigger and better and something more lucrative and the next stage of their career. Guys who are transferring, you're like, you're leaving us to go someplace else that is not a step up. Because let's be clear, there are no steps up from Duke at the college level.
So I think the other thing is Kyle Filipowski, I know we're talking about guys who declaring one way or the other. He jokingly had a tweet to Jeremy Roach's announcement today, like, oh man, I missed that deadline. I guess I'll have to wait till tomorrow. So he's probably going to announce tomorrow what his future is. But I do think, that banquet, I think you're going to have all the announcements done by the banquet. Like, I'd say, again, say for someone who might transfer, I think the reason why is they like to have the banquet be about the team. So I don't think anyone's going to make any announcements at that banquet, because that's about the entire team and celebrating that the year they had and all the accomplishments that they did have. So I think if we're going to have any announcements from Kyle Filipowski or from Blake's or Shoot, they're going to come before that banquet on Thursday night.
Yeah, and I'll add this about that. I don't think they want uncertainty hanging over the banquet. So, I mean, like, it would be very awkward for Kyle Filipowski at the banquet, if he's won one of these statistical awards, which I'm sure he has, whatever, as he goes up, everyone's like, hey, stay, they don't want that kind of circus at the banquet. Now, look, if he truly hasn't made up his mind, if he doesn't know what he's going to do, then no one's going to force him to make a decision. But if he's made a decision, they're not going to hold on to it.
I agree. It's all of these things are intertwined. One last thought on this before we reflect on Jeremy Roach's career, if it is in fact over, so Jeremy Roach is announcing today that he's leaving to go prepare for the NBA draft process, though he is maintaining his eligibility. There are still like 2.5 weeks left of the semester, including finals. I don't know. And look, I'm not going to speculate about like what classes he's taking and blah, 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 but it is very hard. Unless you are one of my friends, and I wonder if anyone listening to this will recognize this story, but one of my good friends and fraternity brothers had to leave for a medical thing at the end of sophomore year and was gone for the last month. And we made fun of him because he managed to get exceptions such that he could just start junior year on time. And I wonder like what that process looks like for Jeremy Roach if he just like bails on all of his finals, but I'm sure they'll figure it out.
He's a junior now, so he has two full summers of classes also. Like these guys, when they're doing the summer workouts, they're taking classes long.
But is he on academic probation if he drops out of all of his classes right now? I don't know. They come up with something.
They'll figure it out.
Duke is really careful about this stuff, and these players understand that they've got to take academics at least a little bit seriously. Yeah, I think they'll figure it out.
Anyway, I just like knowing because I think it's fun. Guys. If this is Jeremy Roach's last time being part of the Duke program, and by the way, I assume he's going to the banquet on Thursday and that they'll give him, he gets the captain's award. I think they have the captain's award that's named after Mike Krzyzewski's brother. So he's getting that because he was the captain this year. But reflect very quickly on Jeremy Roach's career at Duke over the last 3 years. Donald, I will let you go first.
Steady improvement. I mean, every year he got better and better. And I think, if you think about the highlight of his career, it kind of helped bring him to, I mean, this year was his best statistical year in a lot of categories, but you have to go back to that 2022 NCAA tournament where he just kind of took off. And that Jeremy Roach was you know, he was playing some of the best basketball that any of us have seen in a long while by an individual player. So I really appreciated his contributions to the program and the fact that he stuck around. I mean, if you remember this time last year, there was a lot of talk about him possibly transferring and possibly leaving the program. I'm very glad he stayed because that him being one of the few guys that were able to transition from the end of the Coach K era to the beginning of the John Shire era, I think that was well needed from this team, especially how young a team was. To have him be the leader and captain and step up in those areas is something that made this team successful. Yeah, we didn't get to the national championship game. Yeah, we didn't win a title, but we're hanging a banner, and that is due in large part to the success of Jeremy Roach as a leader on this team. And so I appreciate him for that.
He will be a main character when they write retrospectives about the Coach K to John Shire transition, because he and Jalen Blakes are like the only players who returned from the last Coach K team to the first John Shire team. And frankly, like, Jeremy Roach is the only like player of, you know, real significance there, because Blakes didn't end up playing that much this year, although we thought he might have early in the season. So Jeremy Roach is a piece of connective tissue within the Duke program that I think was very important this year, right? And we don't know exactly sort of who was playing what role behind the scenes, but I am sure that there were challenges this year with John Shire figuring out exactly what the job of the head coach was. Jeremy Roach is the only guy who was like, yeah, I was getting my ass chewed out last year by Coach K, like everyone does. And this year I'm getting whatever version of that is the nice guy John Shire version. So I think he was essential to the program, Donald, to your point. He was a great player in his sophomore year at the end of the Coach K era. He was incredible in the NCAA tournament. And then this year, even though the performance was up and down, he still was mostly a steady presence for Duke. And I think you're going to hear a lot of the younger guys give him a lot of credit for being the captain and showing them how to be Duke basketball players, even in the absence of Coach K.
You know, we feel like Jeremy Roach's performance was up and down this year. I think we forget he had a nagging injury that really affected his December and January. And, you know, he would miss games, and then he'd come back and he'd play some games, and he just wouldn't be himself. And then he would miss more games. Once he got healthy, I think folks forget how good this guy was. He scored in double figures in 15 of Duke's last 18 games, in 9 of Duke's final 10 games. He single-handedly dismantled NC State when we played them in Cameron. His ability to get to the bucket and get baskets late in the game against NC State in that game in February was, I mean, we haven't seen guys do that very often in a Duke uniform. It was really impressive, just layup after layup. He then had 23 points in back-to-back games against UVA and Oral Roberts, UVA in the ACC championship game. Again, 23 points against a really good Virginia team that plays great defense, slow-paced game. He had almost half of Duke's points in that game. And then he scores 23 in the first-round game against Oral Roberts. Wasn't a very competitive game, but believe me, everybody thought it was going to be a closer game than it was. And it was, you know, Jeremy Roach going off for 23 is the big reason why that was a laugher, as opposed to being the competitive nail biter that many people thought it would be. On the biggest stage throughout his career, Jeremy Roach was at his best pretty consistently. And that's a hell of a quality to have in a guard. And I didn't even mention perhaps the best game of his career. Do you guys remember when we played Virginia Tech? He had 19 points and 11 assists against Virginia Tech. I mean, that was a hell of a game. That said, I mean, Jeremy Roach was never the creator, never the assist guy that you would expect a point guard to be. His outside shot never quite got to where you need it to be for him to be, you know, someone who the NBA really considers. He did improve his outside shot every year. I mean, if we're reflecting on his career, he was, you know, barely 31% as a freshman. He hit 32.2% as a sophomore. And then last year, this past season, he was 34.3%. If you tell me Jeremy Roach is going to come back to Duke and get another 2-4% of his three-point shot, if he gets up to close 38%, then suddenly Jeremy Roach does look a little more attracted to the NBA, and And he's a potential, like you guys said, a potential All-American, All-ACC kind of player. But, you know, but he even if we're writing the book on it right now, there are a number of really impressive moments in Jeremy Roach's career, and we can't thank him enough for all he did.
He wasn't a scorer. He wasn't a creator. He was a gamer, right? Like he like whenever the game was down to his final moments, Jeremy Roach had the ball.
He wanted the ball, that's for sure.
Yeah. He wanted the ball in his hands, and he was able to make something happen with that basketball. I mean, look at those UNC games where when the chips were down, it was a tight game. Both times this year, he got that basketball, took it to the rack, laid it in, and we were talking about those layups as being the point that the game was over because we knew that Jeremy Roach was on the case. So that's Jeremy Roach to me, him being a gamer when he was in the Duke uniform.
And if this is his last game, or if he's already played his last game as a Duke player, then it also means we have to say goodbye to his parents coming to all the games, I assume. Unless some parents, I think, just stick around.
They're always allowed to come back.
Yeah, no, I think they're always invited and they always get tickets. I'm not sure that John Shire's parents actually ever left. I think they've just been going to the games.
It's been like, chilling.
We've been seeing John Shire's parents in the stands, I think, for like close to 20 years now. So yeah. It's totally possible that they keep coming. I actually do. I can't remember which player it was, but I remember us either talking to a player or some players saying that like he had graduated and his parents were still going to the games because they're like, whatever, like this is fun. You know, like Mickey Krzyzewski, I think, still sits upstairs because she's like, what else do you want me to do? Like,
it's Cameron. Like,
if there's a Duke basketball game, I'm there.
Yeah,
I know that Grant Hill's parents came back for a long time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So why not? Maybe Jeremy Roach's parents will keep driving the 4 hours down from Leesburg to to attend all the games. And maybe if they do that, then Corey Alexander will continue to remind us that they have driven 4 hours from Leesburg to be down here in Durham tonight for the game. Guys, I think this is enough on Jeremy Roach. We certainly wish him the best, whether he is sticking in the draft, whether he ends up overseas, whether he ends up back at Duke next year, or, you know, I guess there's a chance he could transfer and be somewhere else. We'll be rooting for him because despite, I think, the inconsistencies and despite the injuries and stuff, he has had some incredibly high moments for Duke, and we are grateful to him for some of the good times over the last 3 years. So we will see what happens with that. Let's take a quick break. When we get back, we're talking Nike Hoops Summit. This is a recruiting topic, so if you're not familiar with it, you'll learn more right after the break. We are back, and as we mentioned before the break, we are talking Nike Hoops Summit. So you may recall a couple weeks ago, we talked about the McDonald's All-American game, and we said, oh, wow, isn't it great that Jared McCain won the three-point contest? And oh, wow, isn't it great that Sean Stewart won the dunk contest? And really, you know, they showed out in their own ways in the game. But we were somewhat disappointed that Duke's top recruit, not the top-ranked recruit in the class, but Duke's highest-rated recruit for the class of 2023, Mackenzie Mbako, had merely a so-so showing at the McDonald's All-American game.
Yo, Sam, don't sugarcoat it. He was bad.
He was bad. Fine. Look, I'm trying here to be nice to the Duke guys. That's the least I can do. Well, let me tell you, Mackenzie Mbako heard that he had a bad game in the McDonald's All-American game because he came out and was the leading scorer for the world team in the Nike Hoop Summit. So, Jason, you were paying attention to this. What did Mackenzie Mbako look like in the Nike Hoop Summit, which is another one of these, you know, highly coveted All-American end-of-season opportunities for the high school seniors?
Well, let's start with the stats, because you mentioned it. Leading scorer, not just for the world team, of everyone who played in the game. Mackenzie Mbako ends up scoring 22 points. He had 8 rebounds. The next highest scorer of anyone else in the game was a guy who had 17. So Mbako was easily the leading scorer. The USA did beat the world team, USA 90, world team 84. Mbako, who has family relations to Nigeria, played on the world team. And they were, frankly, the world team didn't have as much talent as Team USA did. They did a good job keeping it as close as they did. There were a number of moments where it looked like Team USA was going to pull away pretty significantly, and the world team would sort of fight and claw their way back. In terms of Mbako, to me, perhaps the most impressive thing was the fact that he was really aggressive, that he was looking to score, that he was the guy in charge with the ball in his hands. He played more than 30 minutes, which is the second most of anybody on his team. And this is a game where usually in these all-star games, they try and be really egalitarian about the minutes. Like the coaches are like, oh, let's make sure everybody gets to play. That's not the case at the Hoop Summit. They're really trying to win. And, you know, for Mackenzie Mbako to get 30 plus minutes showed that the coaches knew that this guy was, you know, was a serious player. There were a number of guys in this game on the world team who played less than 10 minutes. So Mackenzie Mbako could play a lot. And, you know, again, it just indicates how much faith they had that he was a guy they could count on. He was 6 of 14 from the floor. Not the most efficient scoring. You know, that's not great. But he was 2 of 5 from three-point range, 8 of 10 on free throws. And I was impressed when I was watching this game, his ability to get into traffic, to draw fouls and get to the free throw line and knock those free throws down. If you're a team and you're, you know, you need a bucket, you need a point, you need to, you know, like there are games you see all the time where a team's stuck on 60 or something like that. And you're like, oh, we just got to get even 1 point and get off this number. Well, Mackenzie Mbako showed he's the kind of guy who can get you off a number by getting to the free throw line. I was impressed with the 8 rebounds as well. He had really, really good touch on his shot. He had absolute confidence in his offensive game. I don't want to go too crazy, though, because I thought he seemed very relaxed on defense, didn't seem super engaged on defense. He also had 5 turnovers. He seemed to settle for jump shots, for perhaps low percentage jump shots, a bit too often for my taste. You may recall from a year ago that I said the same thing about Derek Whitehead. I was like, oh boy, this guy's going to take a lot of 18-foot jumpers that are going to drive me crazy. Mackenzie Mbako looks like the same kind of player, but I can see why he was such a highly touted prospect. You can see these glimmers of why people utter the name of Jason Tatum as a comparison to Mackenzie Mbako. Look, he needs some discipline. He probably really needs to be challenged. I think that he probably hasn't faced competition that actually can stop him in a long time. And going to Duke this summer will be eye-opening and will force his game to evolve a little bit. And then the last thing is, dude is a legit 6'9". He is big. He's 215. He looks physically mature when he's out there. He is not someone who's going to be pushed back a lot. I am very excited to see what role he plays at Duke, because I feel like this guy is ready to perhaps be Duke's leading scorer next year. There's a possibility, a very good possibility, that he could be Duke's leading scorer next season.
And look, if he turns the 18-footers into 22-footers, no one's complaining. So
exactly.
Just add a few feet this summer. I've been trying to add 1 foot every summer since I was like 15. It hasn't worked for me yet, but maybe Mackenzie Mbako will pull it off. Donald, Duke had 2 other guys playing in this game, not just Mbako, but the aforementioned Sean Stewart and Jared McCain. What did you see from them at the Nike Hoop Summit?
Well, I didn't get to watch the game, but I actually saw a lot about what was going on during their training sessions and the camp leading up to the game. And the talk around those two particular guys, and I just want to list some of the other guys that you're probably going to hear their names next year. DeJuan Wagner Jr., Bronny James is on this roster. You know, Blake Buchanan, Cody Williams was on this roster. Of those guys, Sean Stewart and Jared McCain were listed as the 2 most cerebral guys on this team. The guys who the coaches were lauding at the fact that they knew where on the court they needed to be at all times, and they were able to be in the right place almost every single time. And they worked well with each other. There was a lot of video from camps where they were finding each other for pick and rolls, for alley-oops, or even just no looks, where one would drive the lane and kick to the other for a three-pointer in the corner. That sort of vision and that sort of chemistry is really going to be great next year. And I'm looking forward to seeing those two, how they interact with one another alongside Mbako when they all get to campus in a couple of weeks. But I do think the fact that they're, you know, that these kids out of a talented group of guys were labeled the smartest kids in camp I mean, we love getting smart kids, and if that smart can translate to the basketball court, it means a lot of court vision, a lot of guys who, again, can be in the right place at the right time for this team.
So in terms of how they played during the actual Nike Hoop Summit game, Jared McCain played 22 minutes, scored 10 points on 5 of 9 shooting. He did not take a single three-pointer, and what I loved about his game was when they stepped up to prevent this guy who's a dynamite shooter, when they stepped up to prevent him from taking threes, he just put the ball on the floor and went into the lane, and he was outstanding at finishing, you know, that sort of mid-range, that foul line kind of jumper, or even taking the ball all the way to the basket. Again, 10 points. They had very balanced scoring on the USA team, and McCain was one of the key scorers for them. And by the way, most of his buckets came like in the fourth quarter when this was a really competitive contest. He was the same way in the McDonald's game. He was a guy out there when the game was on the line, the ball was in his hands, and he was, you know, making the shots. He, by the way, had some very nice assists again in this game. He ended up with a team leading 4 assists for the USA team. And I guess I kind of lament the fact that Bronny James is not coming to Duke, because Jared McCain and Bronny James just look like they have really great chemistry in this game and the McDonald's All-American game. When Jared McCain would draw the defense and someone would make a cut to the basket or get open beyond the 3-point line and McCain would make a good pass, it seemed like that pass was to Bronny James more often than not. Those two guys really work together well. Unfortunately, they won't get to play with each other. And then in terms of Sean Stewart, he only played 9 minutes. He started, but he only played 9 minutes for Team USA. He's really raw. He only had 1 bucket. He did have 4 rebounds, but he is clearly an athlete. He's got pogo stick legs. I mean, he's just jumping all over the place. I was watching him, and to some extent, I was like, this guy's the opposite of Ryan Young.
Jason, during the McDonald's All-American game, I commented when we recap that, I commented on how quickly he gets off the ground. Like he's from like 0 feet to 5 feet, like very, very quickly. And because of that, he's able to get rebounds over guys because it's almost like a race. He's the first to the ball in the air every single time. He may not be jumping the highest, but it doesn't matter because before everyone else has a chance to even get their legs off the ground, he has the ball and he's coming back down.
Yeah, Sean Stewart is someone who's going to be exciting to watch at times, but he's super raw right now. And I do think that when you look at his skill level, it's hard to see him being a guy who, you know, who's one and done, or a guy who is getting more than, I don't know, 15, maybe 20. I doubt he's going to get more than 15 or 20 minutes just because I don't think he's quite there from a skill standpoint. But boy, physically, he's fun to watch.
Okay, fun stuff. I love it because I didn't watch any of this. So this is not on my radar all the time. So thank you guys for tuning in to the games or the practices and the news about it. I think that's going to do it for us here. Stay in touch, dbrpodcast@gmail.com. We've gotten some great emails the last couple of weeks about topic ideas for the offseason. So we're still, I feel like we're still hanging on to the fact that there's like offseason news going on. We also appreciate everybody sending us whatever feedback they've had about the transition to the new hosting service. Hopefully you haven't experienced, I mean, if you're listening to this, you certainly haven't experienced any changes in your service from the Duke Basketball Roundup. But if you have, obviously let us know. We think that the transition has gone smoothly, but we are only us, and we need to hear from you if that is not the case. So with that, we'll leave it there. Episode 510 of the Duke Basketball Roundup Podcast. For Jason Evans, for Donald Wine, who are going on adventures afar this week, leaving me all alone, I am Sam Klein. We'll talk to you again soon. Duke Band, take us home.
Did you see this randomly that Joey Baker is turning pro?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
That he's signing with agent and it didn't say entering the NBA draft. It said he was turning pro.
Again,
my guess is.
Yeah, exactly. Like, what is that? What does that mean? I understand conceptually what it means. What does it mean for Joey Baker?
Well, it's funny because
it means he's no longer trying to get that red shirt year back.
Yeah. A couple of comments literally said "ni hao." So yeah, maybe he's going to China.
Yeah, exactly. How do you say?
Oh, and the other thing was,
how do you Twitter say hello in people, Serbian?
Twitter was full of people who were like, "Joey Baker heard Caleb Love was coming to Michigan," and he was like, "Yeah, I'm turning pro then."
Mm-hmm.
Did he have a hard time getting shots this year?
Oh, he got shots. He got the last shots in some games. He can go in, but
he ain't getting them next year.
No.
Not with Shooter McShooty Shoot.
It's time for him to grow up and go out on his own. And
yo, I think it would be the greatest thing ever if Caleb Love went to Michigan and became like a much more efficient and disciplined player. And like, that'd be awesome.
Yeah. I love Michigan to death. That's never going to happen. Like, I'm sitting here like, yo, y'all got Caleb Love. Now I got to like root for at least a modicum of success from this man, or at least to not tear down the rest of the team. Cause yeah, they're going to be the opposite of what Jason just described next year. Very undisciplined, not efficient.